Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, it was the game we all had circled, and it didn't quite go as the Cavaliers had hoped. The win streak comes to an end. Spence and I, here to break it all down with you as we talk Cavs, Celtics. Where do they go from here? And maybe the most important question of all, is the Cavs frog sticking around? All that and more coming up on Courtside with the Cavs on SI Podcast, part of the Cleveland Cavaliers on SI. Well, folks, welcome on in to the latest episode of Courtside with the Cavs on SI. Spence and I trudged through New Orleans and back again, and we are here to talk Cleveland Cavaliers basketball. Obviously, maybe, Spence, the most disappointing thing of all about last night's loss for me is that we now will never get you to admit that the Cavaliers have a signature win. So
I tried to tell you. You're never going to get me to budge. And even if they would have won that game.
I was so mad. I wanted to win so bad so we could come on this show and I could just spend 30 minutes just trying to goat you into saying it. That's all I wanted to do.
I knew that's what you wanted to do. And you were trying to tell me that too when we were down in NOLA. I was like, nope, standing tall, standing on my ground. And, you know, last night I actually would have come close just because of how many wing players that Cleveland was missing. But nope, yep, the rest of the year you're not hearing a thing from me, and your radio bit that you're trying to bring on to me is not going to work.
Hey, December 1st is just around the corner, okay? They play him again. It's right around the corner. We'll work our way back up to it. Don't you worry there, Spence. It's going to happen. But no, listen, there's a lot to dissect from this game, and we certainly want to dive into a bunch of different topics with you guys and divulge all these things. And I think – maybe the natural starting place is that I think the Celtics do deserve some praise here. There's reasons to be upset about the loss for sure, but like that team is just really, really good. And I think we saw last year, they have moments where they can fall asleep at the wheel. And I think that's been the case a little bit this year too. But what last night showed me, you know, there was a number of different stakes associated with this game. It was, for the Cavs, it was continuing the streak. It was a chance to maybe prove that you are the team to beat in the East right now, at least, you know, momentarily in this moment in time, if you can win that game. It was draped in the very bright court that represents the Emirates in-season tournament or the NBA Cup. Like, there were so many different things kind of in play here. And that game showed, like, when the Celtics want to – when the Celtics want to turn it on and the Celtics come to play, they can give it to you the way that they did. And I think the Cavs conversely deserve a ton of credit because they weathered the storm, man. Like that Celtics team was up nearly I was hosting a radio show during the middle of it, so I didn't see like exactly what the lead built to at one point, but I know it was at least like around 20 points and the Cavaliers hung in there. They started taking what the Celtics were giving them, the in close shots, letting Evan Mobley kind of do his thing. And they climbed back into that game and made it a lot more fun at the end. And like, I didn't walk away from this game, Spence, feeling like even though the Celtics are a really, really good team and they are sort of Warriors-esque in that they can almost like break your will and your spirit because they can just hit threes in an alarming rate. But I didn't walk away feeling like they're so outclassed by this team, especially when you consider the injuries. I know the Celtics didn't have Kristaps Porzingis either, but a number of rotational guys out for the Cavs, as we know. So like seeing these, I walked away more so excited about seeing these two teams play again at full strength.
No question. And you have to look at the context of the injuries too. Yes, Kristaps Porzingis, big part of what they do, stretching the floor. they have that a little bit in Al Horford in the sense of he can hit the outside shot. He's obviously not as athletic. He's not as young and maybe not as impactful as the rim protector, but he's still a very sound defender, quick on his feet, and is able to still bury that tray, as we've seen. With the Cavs, they were missing the only wing players they had. Isaac Okoro, Dean Wade, Caris LeVert, all of those guys have seen action at the three, and not to mention Max Strus hasn't played a game yet this year. Now, that sounds like an excuse. I'm not going to go there. The Celtics completely dictated the pace of that game. I said it with John last night. They were the ones who came out, got stops, and then got up the floor and were firing that thing away. They averaged over 53-point attempts per game. They were shooting that thing to the tune of 60-plus percent. That is hard for the Cavs because they thrive in the open floor. If they're not getting up and down the court, you're forced into half-court situations. And when you're in half-court situations against the Boston freaking Celtics, who have two near Hall of Fame defenders in Drew Holiday and Derek White, then you're going to be in a world of hurt. And if you do get past them, then you have to deal with guys like Al Horford, who can switch and do a really good job of just walling things off. And you know, obviously Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum don't get their just due on defensive end either. So it's hard because you're playing slower, you're not in the flow, and then you get back to the hero ball, you get back to more ISO, which that's not you. That's not what has gotten you to this point. And you say that, you know, the Celtics hit the three at an alarming rate. The Cavs have done the same thing this year. It was just a little bit of their own medicine, and that was the case last night. And tale of two halves, they stuck and hung in there. And I know Kenny Atkinson, he said post-game that he kind of put a little blame on himself for not realizing the game plan wasn't working to the way that he expected it. He wasn't as prepared as he thought on either end of the floor. And he took a lot of that blame, and I think that's pretty admirable. And you saw the adjustments in the second half, the way that they were able to use Craig Porter Jr. as a screener and somebody to free up Donovan Mitchell, who really started going off in the third. Evan Mobley, who should have gotten more touches in the fourth, really, really got going in the third quarter. And they were hunting mismatches, getting him on smalls, and he was really making them pay. So you have the formula a little bit more from what you saw in that second half. Let's see if they bring it December 1st in the rematch.
I want to come back to Mobley here in a second. I was going to say on your point of what Kenny said after the game, you know, we've talked so much about his in-game adjustments and his ability to change things up if it's not working. When we talked about that small lineup he deployed against Brooklyn and how that kind of worked out for him. And it was just kind of throwing something against the wall and seeing if it stuck. And that's maybe the biggest difference between him and JB Bickerstaff, right? Like, and that's where I feel good about this is like him admitting that after the game is a coach is going to generally do that anyway. But like, for him to admit that, it makes me like I'm encouraged by hearing that because it's like I know the next time they play each other, he's going to make adjustments. He's going to find a different sort of route to do or a different way to do things if something isn't working. That's going to be more at the forefront of his mind. Like I actually trust Kenny Atkinson to do that. And so I was encouraged to hear him say that after the game as well. I think that's a huge, huge thing that shouldn't be sort of slept on here is like you have a coach who can own that after a game and then realize like, okay, next time we see him, we're going to go about things a little bit differently. And I kind of have a better sense of what to do and how to attack this team. So I like that response from him. And I thought that was good. Can I just ask you, Spence, I don't know how much you talked about this in the post game. That should have been a flagrant foul on Jason Tatum. No. Yeah. Like, I mean, Donovan bleeding from his mouth. I know this was kind of a hotly debated thing that I talked about on the air yesterday. And I was like, I didn't have the sound on. So I saw him shoot the free throws. And for some reason in my mind, they went to commercial and came back. And I thought because he was shooting the free throws that they did rule it a flagrant. And then I missed that they didn't actually get the ball back. And then somebody brought that up to me later. And I was like, okay, so I missed that point in real time. Yeah, to me, that was egregious and probably should have been a flagrant foul. I understand they were letting him play a little bit, but Jason Tatum came out of nowhere and just like ran into Donovan Mitchell for whatever the hell reason. I was like, how did that not get called or changed to being upgraded to a flagrant? I didn't understand.
Yeah, we didn't touch on that at all last night, Spence. And the funny thing is, you know, Jason Tatum was going for the ball. Like, there's no question to me in that sense. But in the process, he shouldered the dude right in the jaw. And we do have flagrants in the NBA that are kind of ruled incidental contact and stuff like that, that should be, you know, penalized for a flagrant one in that situation. Does that change the outcome? I don't know, but it gives the Cavs a chance because Donovan was knocking down threes in that final minute and got to the line and was doing all sorts of stuff to try to give him that kind of final Hail Mary. That was, you know, a pretty significant part of the game. I think that Cleveland's going to remember that the next time they play him in a couple weeks. But yeah, I think it was a flagrant. I think there was another part of the game that we didn't really touch on too much last night was Ty Jerome's final shot at the buzzer, an NBA Cup play for margin of win, margin of loss. That's a big deal. That's another thing.
Yeah.
If you want to look at that, but yeah, the Cavs gave it their all at the end. Donovan Mitchell probably took a little too many shots in the fourth. Like I said, Evan should have touched the ball a little more, but that's either falling back into bad habits, or Donovan's allowed to have ISO situations. That's why the Cavs have him. He's a star. It's not like he's being selfish. He just kind of got into that mode to where he thought that he was going to be the one to have to bring it back way that Darius Garland was shooting. And I'm sure that's the next part of the subject we're going to get into with DG.
Yeah, and listen, I don't blame Donovan for doing that because he is like the star of this team, and there are going to be certain moments where you do look to him to sort of take over. So, you know, as he understands who he is, he understands how important he is to this team. I'm never going to fault a superstar for having that mentality. You get what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to blame Donovan for wanting to take over in a moment, feeling like he needed to sort of step up for his team. If it doesn't work, sometimes it doesn't work.
He just did it in Philly. He just did it in Milwaukee the other night.
In Milwaukee, he hit the game winner. Exactly. So, yeah, like, I'm okay with that being the result if that's how you lose. Now, I understand that where Kenny Atkinson's coming from, where it's like, listen, we've talked about the importance of Evan Mobley. We got to get him more involved in the fourth quarter of a close game like this as well. And, again, I feel encouraged by the fact that you're 15-0, you're learning from wins, and that's exciting. But even, like, there's still things to take away from, like, in a loss you lose, you can – learn from that and then make the adjustments and be better from it next time. So I feel encouraged by how the Cavs will respond to this. We'll talk a little bit more about that here coming up. You brought up DG. Let's go there next, because I guess I understand where people are going to point at the playoffs last year and point to now this Celtics game, the first like real they've had some tests, but this was like the first real major test on their schedule. And let's just face it, like, the Celtics are the defending champs. They're so good. They're called the modern day Warriors. Anytime you play them, you're getting measured against that team. Like, that's just how it is, especially if you're a contender in the East. So I get where that comes from, where it's like, you're going to hold your favorite team's players to a higher standard against that team and on those biggest stages. But to me, if you take away from last night that DG just like isn't a good player, and you've rehashed and reopened all these conversations about like trading him and all that, then I just have to assume you don't really know what you're talking about, because again, maybe that conversation comes back up at some point, but like the way he's played through this opening stretch of the season, how can you possibly think that about the guy? Like, he's returned to his all-star form, and I can't go there off of one regular season game where he struggled. It's basketball. Like, sometimes guys just have off nights. He was having an off night last night. I don't think that means that he can't play in clutch games and in big games. And we talk about the meeting on December 1st coming up. I'm really looking forward to that rematch, if nothing else, because I want to see DG have a bounce back game and shut all those people up.
He's going to have a driving factor after this one, for sure. And there are so many thoughts I have on this. I mean, some people are doing it again. That small amount of fans are doing it again. The Donovan continues to say he's shutting people up, stay on that side. All that stuff that he said from the night that DG, I think, had 39 or whatever the hell it was, that was exactly what he was talking about. You guys, that small piece, they're fickle. Fickle people, fickle fans that don't know what they're talking about. Now, here's where I will level with you before you cut up this clip and say that, you know, and end it where I just said that. Here's where I will level with you. Derek White, Jrue Holiday, very, very tough to play against. that is a valid concern for anyone. You could have the best point guard in the NBA, and they're going to have problems with Jrue Holiday and Derek White.
Yeah.
Where DG has to get better is, and he did this last playoffs, is he thinks that because Al Horford's a little bit older, that he can beat him on dribble drives. Was not the case last night. It was not the case in the postseason back in May. So go back to the drawing board on that one. Also, just did not make shots. Had some open looks, but he was a little bit kind of off. He was short on a lot of those looks. And Kenny Atkinson said it after the game. He's not going to say it because he doesn't make excuses, but Darius kind of was at the end of his rope there with as far as the amount of games that the Cavs have played to this point. He hasn't missed one yet. That's another thing. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot compared to a Celtics team that had 2 days off. Like, and people are, oh, it's excuse. No, no, it's truth. It's reality. And Darius has been one of the best players for the Cavs this year. He's been defending his ass off. He's been shooting the lights out. He's been finding his teammates and taking care of the basketball. He's been getting to the paint and really using that floater to perfection pretty much. Do not let one bad game where he went 3 of 21 from the field. You know that's not him. Do not let that change your opinion of Darius Garland because of the first 15 games that were good and just one bad game that happened in Boston. I understand it's bad timing when you look at the game itself and the stakes, you could say, but he has been nothing but great this season. And Kenny Atkinson has talked him up over and over and again, and his teammates have too. So back off with that crap. It's so annoying to me. There is a small, small piece of this town that roots for another team that takes it out on the other squads in this city. And it's just so annoying. And as I said on my posts on Twitter and on Blue Sky, I am a Cleveland sports fan. So don't call me some elitist media member because I'm not. I am a Cleveland sports fan. I see it every time it happens.
I've always looked at you and thought elitist media member, Spence.
I think so. I think so. Yeah, that's exactly what I am. You know, the guy that goes out, drinks beers, and sings karaoke. But for real, though,
keep
like
behind the curtain there,
it's so maddening to me that you could just say nothing during all that good for the first 15 games and then come out of the woodwork. And I understand we live in a society on Twitter and Blue Sky, whoever, that there's bots and there's all sorts of trolls and stuff like that. But there are real people that are actually upset about last night. And I just don't know how you can be that mad after a 3-point loss in a game in which you were missing 3 to 4 wings and other guys had to step up, smaller guys had to step up, and they did a damn good job of fighting back in the second half and making that a real game to where they almost won that thing and stole it.
Yeah. Listen, the team was 15-0 going into that game. They've been incredible this season. This doesn't have to – one bad game against the Celtics for Darius Garland, one loss for this team, doesn't have to be some sky is falling moment where we just start like making bold stances and taking bold stances and making bold claims about this, that, and the third. Like, we don't have to sit there and be like, well, this means Darius Garland is trash in big games, or, you know, the Cavs are just never going to be able to beat the Celtics, or they're a bad team now, or like, you don't have to, the season isn't over because you lost this game. Like, they even told you at some point we're going to lose. We knew this was going to happen. Like, you learn from it and you move on. And to your point, Spence, like, I do think you showed you can hang with this team. You can fight this team when push comes to shove, even when you're a little bit shorthanded. And again, I get the Celtics are shorthanded too. And look, at some point, I've been saying this, at some point, maybe the conversation of like, can two small guards win you a championship gets rehashed. And that's a totally valid thing, but it shouldn't be because you think DG is not a good player. It might just be that's not a winning formula when you have to go up against these elite wings like the Celtics have a stockpile of. The Celtics have some elite level wing play, and that's part of the reason why they're so tough to beat. I think you went toe-to-toe with them. Maybe in a 7-game series, you find out that your recipe can't beat their recipe, and that's fine. But like, to slander DG along the way because he had one bad game in the regular season and not even give him a shot at like trying to redeem himself, like I can't ride that train with a lot of these people. It's it's just preposterous. And it goes back to what we've been saying about DG the whole time. Like, whether you want him to stay here and play for the Cavs, whether you want to trade him, like, it benefits the Cavs in general for him to just play good basketball. And we always knew that that was in him. We always knew that he was an elite level all-star type player. And yeah, he had a bad game in the biggest game of the season so far. Guys, they played 16 games. There's what 68 more of them to go, I think, is, if I'm doing my math correctly, 66 more to go. Sorry. Math has never been my subject. Like, it's going to be okay that he had one bad game. And I like I said, I hope that on December 1st, he is like the star of that game and just completely takes over and makes a lot of people eat crow. Like, don't be the person throwing out the takes right now on Twitter that we're all going to come back and have to like retweet and say, well, this didn't age well, because you don't want to have to sit there and face the music on that when you overreacted to just one game.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Old takes exposed, right? But here, you know, I'm reading the comments that we're getting here on the side, and thank you guys for participating. Yes, elite wing play is why the Celtics are as good as they are. But if you really watched last night, the Cavs actually defended the wings really well. What happened? They were getting guys into crowds, and then they were spraying out, and their other guys were hitting threes like crazy. Peyton Pritchard killed them in the first half. Derek White was knocking down all sorts of threes. They have so many weapons that hurt you. Al Horford was knocking down triples. There was everybody that was beating them, except for the wings. I'm not going to say and take away anything from Jason Tatum, because he did win that game at the end. Jaylen Brown did put the ball on the floor and make some really tough lays in traffic. But the majority of that game was everybody on the Celtics was beating the Cavs from the outside. And that's a perimeter defense issue that I think we can get into on here. But beside the point, it wasn't like Tatum went out
a game. Like, you know what the recipe is for them. You do have to defend the 3-point line a lot better. Yeah,
right. It wasn't like Tatum was the main reason they beat the Cavs. Like, it was everyone, because the Celtics are so damn deep and so damn lethal from beyond the arc. You know, they have so many different weapons and ways to go. So don't get me, because they were smaller than them, that is why they lost. Nah, I mean, the wing play would have helped. Isaac Okoro would have defended Tatum well, and Brown. You would have had spurts of Caris LeVert out there. And obviously, Dean Wade, we know what he did to Boston last year in the regular season, and Cleveland is his coming out party, so to speak. But that was not – don't give me that. Don't give me that. No, I don't believe that. And I think that the Cavs can spam mismatches and do a different way of thinking on the offensive end as well, like Kenny Atkinson was saying. Maybe hunting a little bit more mismatches when those lanes are shut down and the cutting is kind of held to a halt of sorts. So there's a whole bunch of stuff you want to get into X's and O's wise, but they played a good second half. They were right in it and they responded. And the small pick and roll was a big reason for that too.
Well, I will say, like, that's to your point. That is why Kenny Atkinson is here, right? Like, he was brought in to find a way to sort of to fix that gap maybe between the two teams last year, where the Celtics were just so much better. And, you know, even if there's some mismatches there because they're such a deep team with a lot of really good wings, he's tasked with sort of trying to find ways to win with the group that he has. Even if you think that they're a little bit outmatched or they don't have necessarily the players to keep up. And I thought last night was at least one small first example of his ability to try to sort of bridge that gap a little bit. And, you know, it comes on the losing end, but that's okay. I on the flip side of that, though, and we've talked about just how Evan Mobley got utilized more in the second half and his effectiveness. I thought he was brilliant last night, Spence. And let's be honest, like, you want to talk about mismatches. He was the thing that stood out as the Celtics don't really have an answer for him. Now, that might change once you reinsert Kristaps Porzingis, like somebody else who can challenge him at the rim a little bit more, because it felt like, we know Tristan Thompson has owned Al Horford for years, and it felt like some of like his expertise on going against Al Horford rubbed off on Mobley, because he was making Al Horford could not hang at all with Evan Mobley last night. Like, I think that was pretty evident. Maybe he can block DG's shot with him trying to run past him, but he was having some trouble against Evan Mobley. And just in general, Mobley was really aggressive. He was the guy that we were hoping he would be in a stage like that and in a game like that, sort of like we saw in the playoffs last year. And like, that's something major to build off of. But that, at least in this first matchup, he felt like an advantage Cavs that they can utilize the next time they play and beyond. And that was one of the biggest positives that everybody should take away from this game, is how Mobley played on that stage against that team that's so, so deep, as we alluded to. There's so many ways they can beat you, but it was nice to see at least one thing that it felt like the Cavs had a maybe not major, but I had a good advantage in the way Evan Mobley played and his ability to attack the rim.
My favorite play from the game was actually what should have been a foul. He shoved Tatum out of the way, got an offensive rebound, and then he ended up getting another missed layup, and then he dunked it on his own follow-up.
I remember that.
Like,
that's right.
That would just show the nasty that Evan's had this year. And look, this is a guy that's been really solid at playmaking and you know, making life hell for everybody else on the other end. I was saying it last night on the post-game show. This guy loves his left hand. He blocks shots with his left hand. He has better handle with his left hand. And I think he's pretty much a left-handed player, even though that he shoots, you know, right-handed, and he was able to step out and make some threes and do a lot more on the offensive end, especially in the second half. Like you said, going after mismatches and also attacking Al Horford, had a nice little jump hook work in. I'm telling you, the array of dribble moves and just the confidence and the strength that he's had this year is just going up. But watch for the left hand in all these games, man. He just loves. You think that they want to try Evan Mobley? You think anyone wants to try Evan Mobley? Be my guest. Be the Cavs' guest. He's guarding guys out on the perimeter, whether they're wings, whether they're bigs, whether they're guards. And then if you don't have to worry about that enough, if there's a switch that happens, he'll guard the guy that's cutting. He'll guard the guy that's rolling, and then he'll stifle them and make you shoot over the top or you're going to get blocked. There's just so many different ways that Evan Mobley can hurt you. I think that they didn't get into transition nearly enough last night. More in the second half they did. They didn't have the ball in his hands quite enough in the fourth to where he would be initiating and facilitating instead of just being in the pocket. But he has just leaps and bounds gotten better. It's so fun to watch that maturation happen in front of your eyes. And he's been tremendous. And, you know, those are just, you know, that's a big member of the core four that we're talking about that, you know, they want him to be the best player on the team. But I mean, overall, I thought that the team stepped up yesterday too, you know, like for all the negative that's coming out, you know, locally, I think you got to give the flowers to George Niang, who's been terrific the last 3-4 games. You got to give some flowers to Sam Merrill, who really held his own defensively against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, despite them making shots. He was right up in them. You know, they were denying the ball for him all night long, nothing off of dribble handoffs. So he only had 3 shot attempts. He made 2 of the threes, but he didn't play much of the game because they were just on ball denial for him all game long. And then back to Craig Porter. I mean, this is a guy that
he was great. You know,
He was.
I mean, there's people. Somebody called in last night when I was hosting and argued, like, why didn't Kenny Atkinson just leave Craig Porter in and take DG out, given how they were both playing? And I said, I said, you know, in that moment, in that game, I can understand that being a move. It just kind of felt like Kenny Atkinson was playing like the I'm gonna go down with the guys that got me here type thing. Like, you know, DG, he trusts DG. DG's played so well, he probably figured at some point he would snap out of it, and he didn't. But yeah, I mean, Craig certainly made that case last night of like, maybe he should have played a little bit more last night because he was clearly locked in and DG obviously had the off night. But yeah, I don't blame Kenny either way, really, because I get one to stick with your guys. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting point because Craig Porter was great.
He was. It was just, again, going into the third quarter, the small pick and roll with Donovan Mitchell. And then once they started hounding Donovan, he had the ball in his hands and he was making plays for others and connecting and you know, secondary assists, hockey assists, if you like to call them that, and also knocking down the three, hit 3 triples, got to the rim. And I was joking last night, man, I'm going to call that guy Mr. TNT. The second time that the Cavs needed him, they were shorthanded. I don't know if you remember that Philly game last year where he went right at Joel Embiid, finished with through contact, and really made a name for himself against the Sixers in that game. This is a guy that just loves the national stage, apparently, and hopefully, even when they are healthy, Craig's getting some minutes because he's certainly earning them right now.
Yeah. Want to go back to the Mobley thing real quick. It has to be encouraging. It should be encouraging that the guy who we've been wanting to see for the last couple of years has emerged. Like, Mobley is doing the stuff that we've been wanting him to do on the biggest stages in the biggest games. He is showing up. He's playing really good basketball right now. And it does feel like if they're going to beat the Celtics throughout the regular season and in a 7-game series, potentially at some point in the playoffs, he is going to be the reason why. That's truly what it felt like to me last night, was like, if Evan Mobley can do that and get the right support around him and become that guy, I think they certainly have a shot at beating the Celtics team, because that's how important he is. And they view him that same way inside the organization. So, Spence, moving forward, we know they have New Orleans tonight, a team that's very banged up, very injured. Zion's out of the lineup. Second out of a back-to-back, a home and or away, and then a home back-to-back nonetheless, which is always a difficult sort of task for anybody. How do they respond from here, you think? Because that is the next big question, in my opinion, is like, yeah, everything's good when you're 15-0 and things are really cooking. But when you get that first loss, and they had talked about, like, at some point we're going to lose and we're going to have to just kind of keep rolling and find a way to respond and not dwell on it. Like, I have high hopes, and I'm assuming that they're not going to really miss a beat. Like, I think they'll keep rolling. I'm guessing they should have a good chance of winning tonight because New Orleans is so shorthanded and they've struggled obviously recently. But like, I'm curious to see how they do respond, not only tonight, but like moving forward as well, when they get some of these other big matchups on the schedule, when they get the Celtics on the schedule again in a little under 2 weeks from now. Like, those types of things will be telling to me, because yeah, like, you got the 15-0 start, historic start. We're all going to remember it. I think it's worth celebrating, but now that that's kind of behind them, I'm curious, like, okay, how do you respond? How do you I don't even want to say come back from, because it's not like they, like, you know, lost some like meaningful playoff game or something, like a game seven. It's just whatever, but I'm like putting too much on it. But yeah, how they respond to it all, and how they play with the streak now over, is something that I'm kind of fascinated to watch unfold, because they said that they needed to be ready to for that next moment once they did lose a game.
Well, here's the thing. Once Wednesday's game is over, the Cavs will have 4+ days of rest, man. This is the first
time
this has
happened.
They
played, I think, 4 back-to-backs. This will be their 4th back-to-back.
Unreal. It's insane. The schedule has been game after game after game. So they're finally going to have some time to breathe, maybe some time to practice, you know, kind of lick their wounds a little bit, hopefully get healthier. I'm sure that we're going to start talking in the next week or so, a couple weeks, about Max Strus's kind of ramping back up. I'm sure that that's going to be around the corner. You know, you have your ankle sprain issues with Dean Wade and Isaac Okoro and Sam Merrill. Caris LeVert, really, to get that knee right, you know, hopefully. This is something that he's popped up on the injury report. It's not the first time either. It happened last season too, you know, from some wear and tear. But I don't know, maybe it's just something that's a lingering issue for him. But they bring in Toronto on Sunday. And then, you know, you're able to get another couple of days off before you face the Hawks. So, like, they finally have like a 2 games and 7-day stretch or 6-day stretch that hopefully will help them just kind of refocus, recharge a bit, get their legs under them. But the Pelicans game tonight, I would not be surprised if you saw them go 10-11 deep. Kenny kept it tight against Boston, tighter than usual, especially for being shorthand. Had 8 guys play, and even the 3 guys that came off the bench played starter minutes. We haven't seen that all year. We haven't seen Donovan Mitchell play 40 minutes in a game, but he was very, you know, reliant on his starters in that contest. So I would suspect against a very shorthanded Pelicans team that they would open up the bench a little bit more. Maybe we see more, Tristan Thompson, maybe Jalen Tyson gets a shot. I was surprised he didn't play against Boston, even for just a little pinch. Luke Travers is another player that I thought, could possibly get some minutes. So against this Pelicans team, I feel like Kenny will be a little bit more open to bringing more off the bench. And then you have that time to rest. You have that kind of, you know, and that's, sometimes you need that. And now that they've lost too, I think this is a lot. People don't talk about this. I saw it on TNT last night. Kenny Smith was talking about it. Kind of that weight off your shoulders now. You're like,
I was going to say
as
that
the streak
yeah.
build as the streak builds. You're just like, all right, we can keep it going. We can keep it going. We can keep it going. Once that final blow comes in, maybe you're just like, all right. You know, like great start to the season. Now, you know, let's continue the habits. Let's continue to
let's catch
to
our
build
breath
on
a little
it.
Bit and
catch
and,
our breath. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that's actually a really thoughtful thing. Like point. Like I was kind of thinking about that last night. Like maybe this helps them sort of refocus a little bit and they don't have to feel the stresses of that game of like each game bearing down on them every single time. So I think there's some validity in that and it just kind of lets you play a little bit more free and relaxed, which is nice. But yeah, I do think this streak helped test them a little bit. I'll also say this, the streak matters from a historical standpoint for sure. And it should be celebrated. Like tied for the second longest streak in NBA history. Only four teams have ever done that. Like the Cavs are in the history books forever. And it's not like the Cavs history is draped in like, you know, the Celtics have what, 18 championships or whatever the hell it is. Like it's not like the Cavs have that. You know what I mean? Like their history is losing to Jordan a bunch in the 90s. Then LeBron makes up most of it. And we're finally at a point where we're like, moving past the LeBron conversation because we have a team to be excited about and talk about that's doing its own sort of blazing its own path. And that's great. So like this streak should go down in history as a memorable Cavaliers moment forever. And we'll certainly remember enjoying it along the way. But it also is important to note, like, because they got off to such a great start and if they can kind of continue this on the other side of this loss, they've put themselves in a really good spot in the East. Cause some of these other teams are struggling a little bit. Knicks are still feeling some things out. Bucks are kind of a disaster right now.
The Bucks have at least won three in a row. Philly's the disaster.
They're starting to come back. Philly is a disaster right now, obviously. So like they've put themselves in a really good spot right now in terms of the standings, and that stuff obviously matters when we get to playoff conversations and all that. So we'll see if they can kind of keep it up from here. I think Spence, though, we talk about where they go from here. I'm also curious about another thing. Where does the Cavs frog go from here? Does the Cavs frog stick around and continue to be a season like the Mets? The Mets had Grimace, right? That was like their whole thing this season was like Grimace throughout the first pitch, and they went on this wild win streak, and they ended up, you know, coming up just short of making the World Series. Does Cavs frog become the Grimace for the Cavs and stick around all season and bring some good juju? I think she should. I heard her PR person say that she's planning on sticking around, I think. So that's good news. I hope the Cavs frog is here to stay.
It depends on if she's bandwagon. Does she hop on to the next team? Is that what it goes? Is
are
the
you
Lily
think she's
Cavs
like a
Cavs?
You think she's like some of these Cavs fans out there just jumping on to the next thing and not
I don't know. We gotta ask Cavs frog. Is she a bandwagoner?
Cleveland
is this
fans aren't really bandwagoners.
There's a lot of Lily pads out there.
That was an unfair shot.
That was mean. That was mean, Spence.
I was trying to allude back to your rant about DG earlier, and it didn't really work for me. Listen, my goal is to two things. Many of you know I work part time at 923 The Fan. I'm a host there. I have two goals. I want to get Cavs frog in studio for like a dance or something like that. On a night the Cavs win, like I want the Cavs to win. And then she wanders over to the studio and we do like a conversation with the Cavs frog, even though she wouldn't say anything. And then I also want to do, I want Cavs frog to join us on our post game reaction show at some point. Like I want Cavaliers on SI to have like some sort of interaction with Cavs frog that like goes super viral and we can like dance with it or something. I don't know. So I hope she sticks around long enough for us to continue to get content and interact with her, because that's like my dream at this point now is just to have Cavs frog on our show in some capacity.
Cavs frog would be cool. Maybe we'll try to get some guests on too, but you know, maybe this brand new
the big fish is Cavs frog. Forget Darius Garland.
Frogs aren't fish.
Forget. I know. I'm just roll with me here, okay? The big fish is Cavs frog. Forget Donovan Mitchell. Forget Jared Allen. I want Cavs frog. That's all I want. I'm kidding, obviously. Donovan Mitchell and Terry Scott would be awesome if we could get them on the show.
Yeah, just maybe. I'll work on that one, Spence. I'll work on that one.
Cavs PR
is
going to
I'm tweeting that out right now, by the way. Spence wants Cavs frog.
Get her on the pod. We want Cavs frog on the pod in some capacity.
Lordy Lou.
You're not with me on this, Spence. You don't want Cavs Frog? Come on.
Does the frog talk?
No, but her PR person talks for her.
Okay, so she actually has
I want to dance. Okay, we need to get Cavs Frog to do like a post game with us, and we can all dance on the post game. That's what we need to do. I saw you dancing. You danced at in New Orleans. You were doing swag surf. I saw you. Uh-huh, you got some moves, Spence.
Yeah,
it's all good.
Yeah. No, we have a little bit of that in the tank. I don't know if we show that on camera, but you know what? If we could get Cavs Frog in the arena when we're in person together,
that's what I want.
That'd be cool. I don't really know what I would ask her. I don't know, you know, just more or less for the photo op.
You could ask what you just asked. Is she a bandwagon or is she going to stick around with the Cavs through the whole season? That's a good question. I also think we need to know, like, was she born a Cavs fan? Was she born a basketball fan? Like, what was her inspiration for getting into basketball?
Should I ask her how do the Cavs shore up their perimeter defense?
You should definitely ask her that too. Yeah, see what she says.
I can't do this. I can't. But no, we should do it. We should figure out a way. I don't know. Does she have a bedtime? Because we usually start our post game show around 11:30.
We're gonna have to get Cavs Frog to hang out for a little bit. Yeah, I agree. Okay. We'll talk to her. Our people will talk to her people. We'll see if we can make it happen. But yeah, we need a Cavs Frog interaction on the podcast in some capacity. So we'll see if we can work on that. In the meantime, guys, Cavaliers will be working on getting a win against the Pelicans tonight. Obviously, you can find more content like this episode of the podcast and others over at the Cleveland Cavaliers on SI YouTube channel. We'll have post-game reaction to tonight's game over there tonight as well, so be sure to tune in for that.
Make sure to subscribe, by the way. Subscribe, comment,
yes,
like,
subscribe
rate
is the most
podcast.
Important thing. Yes.
The podcast, not only just on YouTube, but also on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and Amazon Music. We're all the way over there. You leave a comment, you hit the rating button. Even if you think we suck, just kidding. No, just give us 5 stars because we're cool. That'll actually get this thing going, and you can hear a lot more of us. You know, it's not just me and Spence too. Sometimes you're going to get Tommy and Logan filling in. Maybe Brendan will hop on one. We'll see. But
maybe Cavs Frog.
It's been fun. Yeah, Cavs Frog. Cavs Frog might become a co-host. You never know. But yeah, just that like button, subscribe, rate, and then leave a comment so we have a little bit of feedback. If you think we're good, if you think we're bad, and then also like Spence was saying earlier, we want to make this interactive. Please, please join in the conversation. We'll get you involved. We'll read your thoughts and your comments on the show, and that I think will really get this thing going. And we've really enjoyed it so far. I think we're on episode 7, so we're off to a good start. And getting our voices back too from that trip to New Orleans where Spence and I were having a little too good of a time.
Still working on that, but yeah, guys, seriously, Spence is right, man. I always forget to mention subscribing, but please subscribe. We're loving doing this with you guys. We hope you're enjoying it as well. And as always, you can keep on following along with all things Cavs over at Cleveland Cavaliers on SI or si.com/NBA/Cavaliers. And we'll be back with plenty more coverage as part of the Cleveland Cavaliers on SI just channel platform in general and throughout the season. So keep it locked with us. For Spencer Davies, I'm Spencer German, Spencer Squared, signing off on the latest episode of Courtside with the Cavaliers on SI. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.